An international crisis is building. We are approaching, we may all have, history may already, may show us that we are already in the beginning stages of another world war, brought about by the aggressiveness of Islamic fundamentalism and its plan for not only Muslim countries, but for the world. And never before have women's rights been so important, and will be greatly determined by the outcome of this. 27 years ago in Iran, the Islamic fundamentalists captured their first state. As we're seeing in Palestine, with Hamas winning the election, women did not have many rights in the Palestinian area as it was, and that may become more dire. Also, as mentioned in the introduction, in Iraq, women's rights are under threat by the growing Iranian influence there. What Iran has done, and that is once they seized power, they've used their resources to fund terror abroad and to pursue weapons of mass destruction, which has brought us to the verge of the nuclear crisis that everyone has referred to. Since then, violence, expansionism, and terror against civilians have been hallmarks of Islamic fundamentalism. This is something that has maybe escaped many people's attention, but has been going on for 27 years in Iran. And if the Iranian regime obtains the nuclear weapons, it will use them to maintain control in Iran, threaten countries within missile range, and expand their influence abroad. And the world seems to finally be waking up to the tremendous threat that has been there and growing all along. Okay, to defeat the world's largest or leading state sponsor of terror, one must understand what keeps it in power. And we have to be able to understand the role of women and how the Islamic fundamentalists view women in order to understand their thinking. It's important to understand that Islamic fundamentalism is a political movement, or Islamofascism, which is, you might choose to use that term. It's a political movement. It is not just a conservative form of Islam. I think it's important to understand that in trying to analyze what's going on. This is a political movement. And it's a pathological ideology and a totalitarian political system. The ruling clerics energize their followers by preaching hatred of chosen enemies. The liberal West, as we're certainly seeing just in the last week with the protests against cartoons. They oppose, their chosen enemies are women, moderate and liberal Muslims, and non-Muslim religious groups, particularly Jews, as we've seen with threats against Israel. But most of all, they're really their deepest prejudice that they have been deeply engaged in acting out on since they gained power is against women, and particularly a hatred of their sexuality. They hate liberal culture and democracies because women are allowed to dress, travel, speak, think freely. And they believe that women's freedom and equality are what has corrupted Western culture and democracies. And that is why they think they must purge it and its representatives from their land and even seek domination of non-Muslim countries. The clerics' version of Sharia, which is religious law, imposes a crushing system of gender apartheid on Iranians based on the premise that women are physically, psychologically, intellectually, and morally inferior to men. And the clerics have made laws on how to control, punish, torture, and even kill women and girls. Therefore, misogyny or woman-hating and violence against women have been institutionalized over the last 2.5 decades in Iran. In Iran, as the world talks about it as being a leading terrorist state, it's important to understand how terror begins at home in Iran. What the clerics have put their ideology into practice in the most oppressive and barbaric ways that the world has seen in recent times. And the first victims have been women and girls. Women and girls in Iran suffer from physical and psychological effects of the restrictions and harassment. Women and girls have numerous health problems related to their limited physical activity and inadequate segregated health system. And more seriously, of course, is the hanging and stoning to death of women for basically violations of sexual rules. Given that women are the wives and mothers in Iran, there's a limit to how much they can be scapegoated. If we look to other totalitarian regimes, such as the Nazis, they simply chose to try to run all the Jews out of the country, deport them, and finally round them up and kill them. You really can't do that with all the women in a country, or you soon see that, biologically, it's the end. So what they have done is simply created a system in which they perpetually torment and terrorize the female population. And they use the torment and torture of the women that is often carried out in public as a way of maintaining control and terrorizing the rest of the population. As for example, when they do public hangings or stonings. Not only is that, of course, extremely cruel, barbaric punishment of the women, but it sends a message to the whole community that this is what will happen to you if you step out of line. And this misogyny of the Islamic fundamentalists is not ancillary to the regime's grip on power in Iran and their global sponsor of terrorism. I think one of the things that's very important to understand is how these things are linked. And therefore, if we want to be concerned about defeating the Iranian regime, we have to understand the power of women in order to help break that link. One of the things, I'm going to go through some of the things that we need to do in foreign policy in order to start to address women's rights and women's human rights, not only because they're in and of themselves important, because they most certainly are, but because how this starts to undermine the power of Islamic fundamentalists. One, all governments and agencies and NGOs that do any work on Iran or address Iranian issues should place the freedom of women and girls at the top of their agenda. Give the analysis and defeat of woman-hating equal weight to efforts to contain terror and weapons of mass destruction. Can you imagine what it would be like for Condoleezza Rice and people to start saying, and what about the treatment of women and human rights in Iran, as well as just concern about nuclear weapons? And equate the dismantling of this woman-hating to destroying the structure and power of the theocratic state. One of the things we also, a second thing, is to voice support for women, their freedom and equality in every policy statement on Iran. Don't segregate them off. Because they are so central to maintaining control in Iran, they should also be equally important in addressing all policies on Iran. Speak directly to the Iranian women about their plight under Islamic fundamentalism, because they are listening. There's lots of different ways that communication takes place into Iran, and the women are listening. And engage them and their hopes for freedom, equality, and democracy. All either government departments or non-governmental organizations that deal with human rights and women's issues, democracy, terrorism, and foreign policy should have a plan for advancing women's freedom, equality, as a strategy to defeat Islamic fundamentalism. George Bush, in his recent State of the Union address, talked about reaching out to the Iranian people. He spoke in a way to reach out to the Iranian people. He and many others need to be specific about women. to speak to the women. One of the things that I've encouraged is for U.S. Congress to hold hearings on Islamic fundamentalism in women in Iran. And this would be the same for the parliaments in Europe, other parts of the world, to invite testimony from survivors of the Iranian regime's prisons, and engage strategists on how to undermine the hatred of women and to advance women and women's freedom and equality. Lots of hearings are held in Congress all the time in which they bring torture survivors, political exiles from other parts of the world to speak. They should be doing the same on Iran and specifically inviting Iranian women. And they also need to engage and support opposition groups that are committed to women's freedom and equality. They should be meeting regularly with opposition groups to share information and cooperate on strategies specifically aimed at advancing women's freedom and equality. They should morally, politically, and financially support pro-democracy opposition groups, especially those committed to women's equality. And of course, in order to do that, one of the things that they would need to do is to take the resistance groups that support the empowerment women off the terrorist list. There are Iranian opposition groups that are led by women who are dedicated to women's freedom and equality. But to appease Iran, to help establish normal relations when they thought that was possible back in the 1990s, they put these resistance groups on the terrorist list. And we need to be working to get them off so that we can start engaging with them, talking with them, and helping to support them. I think that we are seeing that Europe has given up on dialogue with Iran, and the world is shifting in their policy on Iran. And what is going to be the fate of those groups that have been disempowered for 10 years now by being on a terrorist list? And we need to find a way to reverse that. Because the Iranian regime holds the upper hand in the power struggle with the West, or any country that supports freedom and democracy, as long as the U.S. and Europe constrain their opponents. That just makes sense. So removing these pro-women, pro-democracy resistance groups from the terrorist list and supporting their efforts to overthrow the Iranian regime provides an alternative approach to either to appeasement that has been tried for a long time now, or to what's going to lead to direct military action. Okay, this new policy approach offers a strategic psychological advantage as well. It will drive the clerics crazy, first of all, to find all the world leaders suddenly talking about women's rights and women's human rights in Iran. They are terrified with any interference with their prison for women, as Iran was called by a UN representative in his report to the General Assembly. The clerics are so afraid of discussion of women's issues, they have banned any publication of materials that defend women's rights. Promoting women's freedom and equality is one of the most powerful psychological weapons to use against the clerics, because it goes to the root of their pathology, their ideology, and their social and political control of the population in Iran. A policy of defeating woman-hating and supporting freedom and equality for women in Iran will complement other policies aimed at defeating terror and stopping the development of nuclear weapons. Supporting a policy of freedom for women in Iran will send a powerful message to pro-democracy activists in Iran, first of all, and certainly it will send a message to what is happening in the Palestinian territories and in Iraq. It will convey to those struggling to survive that we really understand the fundamentalists, their mindset, and their tactics of control. It will empower activists in their efforts to overthrow the Iranian regime. Women in Iran have been politically active for over a century. Those with access to universities have pursued their education as an act of political resistance to the Islamic fundamentalists. Women are active in the pro-freedom, pro-democracy movement and have paid a very large price for their activism. So while everyone in Europe and the United States is sort of stumped about how to contain the clerics, at least a partial solution is right there in Iran, just waiting for the opportunity. So thank you.